the ultimate in reality radio with information that can save life. On this show, you will learn how to recognize the patterns used by the psychopaths that are controlling our world, who have created the living hell we find ourselves in here on planet Earth, where doctors create disease and destroy life and administer biological weapons, nicknamed vaccines, which are corrupting our very genetic structure, where police and the judicial system protect criminals and persecute the innocent, where governments have become terrorists against the people they purport to serve and commit treason every day. By allowing the destruction of our air, water, food, and planet, and now the emptying of our bank accounts, it never ends. And of course, the good news is more and more people are waking up and facing reality as to what's really going on. But of course, one of the most heinous things that the psychopaths that control the world do is suppress the natural solutions to all of the problems that are already available. Because, of course, there's not a lot of money to be made by healing people, because healing people, one of the most important parts of healing people is teaching them what not to do. You know, letting them know the list of ways that their own government is killing them. Like aspartame and pesticides and vaccines and fluoride, and the list is endless. And of course, there's ways to clean up the ocean. There's all kinds of things already available. And so that's the good news, is once the psychopaths destroying the world have been exposed and basically, you know, fired for their crimes against humanity, it will be amazing how everything works out. And I'm trying to be an enzyme in that reaction and help you to face, you know, the big picture of what's going on. And I know that listeners to Republic Broadcasting are some of the most knowledgeable listeners in internet radio. And that's why I really am very grateful to have a show here, because I know you're helping to get the word out. Okay. So let me just say, if you think my work is important, please tell others about the show. You can support my work by donating on the PayPal buttons on either of my sites, which are drcarly.com or reversingvaccineinduceddiseases.com. You can help friends or family who are too old to face reality by getting a consult for them from me. Because, of course, the most important part of waking up is getting your brain working so that your common sense and logic is able to be accessed. To learn how I do consults, please click on the services tab on my reversingvaccineinduceddiseases.com site. You can contact me by emailing me at drcarly@gmail.com or calling me at 828-294-0662 between 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Time any day of the week. My toll-free number available from anywhere in the U.S., Canada, or the Caribbean is 888-321-6751. Of course, if you get a strange message that the number's been disconnected or whatever, have the operator dial it for you. My Skype username is drcarly1, but please only use that if you can't access me by the toll-free, because I use Skype primarily for radio shows and international clients. Okay, there's the music. Our guest is waiting, and this is going to be a great show, folks, so stay tuned. Because today our answer to the question, what's ailing America, is MDs are assassins. We'll be right back. And we're back with What's Ailing America. I'm just going to finish up my intro quickly. Archives of my shows for the past few years on various networks can be found at thelightofdayradioshow.com. Click on Dr. Carly Archives. If you have questions or comments during the show, please feel free to call in during the second hour. Very important that callers mute their phones while waiting to be brought on so as not to cause interference. And the number to call in is 800-313-9443. Of course, please support the Republic Broadcasting Network if you appreciate the shows that are broadcast here, and please let them know what shows you appreciate. Also, you can go to reversingvaccineinduceddiseases.com, click on the link section, and go to the bottom. You can sign up for free for the weekly newsletter I contribute to, the American Survival Newsletter. where I give you lots of information and links to the documents that you need to prove it for yourself. And, of course, one of the most important things everybody should be doing, in my opinion, is getting a silver lungs colloidal silver generator so that you can make colloidal silver to protect yourself from the bioweapons that are being sprayed on us in chemtrails and injected into us in vaccines, etc., etc. And that link is also on the link section of reversingvaccineinducediseases.com. As I said today, the title of our show is, or the answer to the question that I ask every week, what's ailing America? MDs are now medical assassins. And my guest is Dr. Jennifer Daniels. I was so happy to find out where Dr. Daniels is now. I lost track of her for a few years. She also has experienced the medical mafia in the New York State Medical Board, and we'll talk about that more in the future on the show. But, of course, it's really amazing, you know, what happens when you actually learn how to heal people. And she has, you know, her own story as to the crime she committed against the psychopaths in the medical profession controlled by Big Pharma. But I just want to read you part of her bio. She actually attended Harvard. She received her bachelor's degree from Harvard. And received it with honors, receiving a BA degree. She went to the University of Pennsylvania, where she received her medical degree, MD, and also attended Wharton, where she received her MBA in healthcare administration. Amazing credentials, and someone that the medical profession should be, you know, putting on a pedestal. Based on her results with what she's doing, helping people. But, of course, once you actually learn how to help people, that's when you find out that's the one thing you're not allowed to do as a medical doctor. And that's, you know, one of the Twilight Zone moments that those of us who become doctors because we actually want to help people go through once we learn what we're supposed to do and start doing it. She practiced medicine for 10 years as a board-certified family practice physician, where she saw firsthand the power of natural methods. She's been coaching clients to heal naturally since 1985. She's author of the award-winning book, Do You Have the Guts to Be Beautiful? She has also authored a series of CDs on natural hearing, healing, and has created several life-changing reports. Also, Why the 6 O'Clock News is Not Enough exposes the censorship in the media and the epidemic that wasn't, basically telling you how you should be viewing test results, and the truth about superbugs. She also has a website, which I encourage that you go to. Looking for that right now. I have so many papers in front of me. VitalityCapsules.com. So I would like to thank you so much for agreeing to come on the show today, Dr. Daniels. It was amazing, actually. One of the listeners to my show sent me a link to your show that you did a week ago Tuesday, where you actually discussed doctors as pretty much mass murderers. And I was like, wow. Pardon me?
Absolutely, and it's not like mass murderers. They actually are mass murderers.
Right, but see, that's how I talk, you know? And there's nobody else amongst us that talks like that. So when I heard you saying that, I was like, wow, you know, here we go. This is a woman that's got a backbone. So I'd like you to just start wherever you want to start. I definitely want to go over some of that information. Perhaps you can tell listeners how they can listen to the archive of that show, but then also just the numbers is amazing.
Yeah.
Take it away. Okay.
First, the archives are at vitalitycapsules.com/truth-files. That's vitalitycapsules.com/truth-files. And you can go here and listen to the past episodes. They're archived, and my assistant dutifully posts them every Wednesday morning, so it's great. If you missed the show, you can go there. And pretty soon, we're going to make it a paid site, so you can. The recent episodes will be free, but the paid archives will be subscription, but that's in the future.
Right. Yes, because we all need to make a living. And I just want to suggest to people that the first archive you listen to is the last show in March. That's the one where she talked about the mass murderers. It's just so amazing, you know, that you're using those words because, you know, you, like myself, obviously went into medicine because you wanted to help people. And then you learned how to help people, and you thought, wow, look what I'm doing. I'm helping people. And then the hammer slams down. I mean, that's a moment, right?
It is. And the thing is, you never know. You don't know why the hammer slams down, because they don't have to charge you with anything. And so you're left really wondering, oh, my God, what did I do wrong? And you're retracing every single minute you practice medicine. Did I harm this patient? Did I harm that patient? Did something happen? I mean, I would wake up wondering, did something happen I didn't know about? Did I miss something? And so since they never have to tell you what it is you did, then they never have to admit that the fact that someone got better is the real reason why you're out of here. Since they don't have to charge you with anything.
Okay, let me just banter with you on this one, because one of my most important goals for this show is to get people to realize if you want doctors like Dr. Daniels and myself to risk everything, our families, our professions, our lives, to help you, then you need to stand with those of us who are doing the work and doing the right thing. You know, it always amazes me, Dr. Daniels, people will tell me, oh, we need more doctors like you. And on the inside, I'm thinking to myself, oh, really? Who in their right mind is going to come forward and help you people when you do nothing?
Well, exactly. And the thing is, if I had known what I was doing and what I was risking when I was risking it, I'm not so sure I would have taken a $778,000 hit.
Right. Well,
yeah.
I don't think...
I certainly would have charged more money for the visit.
I don't think that would happen. I think that your conscience would have said, I must speak up. And, of course, what you're saying is true. They don't have to press charges against you. And in my case, it was so ludicrous. They said I have a delusion of conspiracy because of a public access TV show I did. They claimed it had nothing to do with my work, but they did spend 3 days during the interrogation inquisition asking me about my protocol and vaccines and what a vaccines do and all this stuff.
I think the bottom line for the listeners is that the investigation of doctors has nothing to do with patient safety. That is really the bottom line, that they are investigating doctors who have done no harm and have done actually a tremendous amount of good, and they are refusing to investigate doctors who actually have harmed. And when I realized that pattern, that's when I realized, aha, the doing harm is the desired behavior. It's not doing harm that's punishable. And for me, that was a total awakening that led to me asking questions that when I was practicing medicine, I didn't dare ask. Because if you start asking these questions, you come to the inescapable conclusion that not only are you murdering people, but you are supposed to murder people. And that if you don't murder people, you will be harshly punished. And that's a tough conclusion to come to when you have a license and a substantial income from this activity. And so I would say to any listener, any licensed physician that you go to see has a built-in conflict of interest. If they were to put your health ahead of the financial interests of the industry, I'm not even going to say their own financial interests, the financial interests of the industry, then they would be heavily penalized. I mean, the number of tools at the discretion of the government for punitive action, especially now, is just phenomenal. So without trial or conviction, you can be placed on a terrorist watch list. Without trial or conviction, you can be placed on a government do not employ list, and they really do keep those lists where it's unlawful for people to employ you.
Right. And you had mentioned, wait, I have to talk about this because you blew my mind. I don't fly anymore. I'm not going to go through the TSA scanners and get my DNA ripped and, you know, different things that could possibly happen. That's why I have my my DVD online. But I definitely, okay, there's that darn music again. We have to go to a break. But I want to talk to you about you being on the terrorist watch list. I'm sure I am as well. I haven't tested it. I'm just curious how you found out about that and what the excuse is. You know, you can't make this stuff up. It's so ridiculous. Okay, folks, we'll be right back. Stay tuned. And we're back with Blitz Hailing America, where our answer today is medical doctors are now assassins, with my special guest, Jennifer Daniels, MD. Her website is vitalitycapsules.com. And before the break, we were talking about, you know, how you all of a sudden become a terrorist because you learn how to help people. And actually, there's a man I know who's involved in the natural pesticide domain where he, you know, tells people how to get rid of pests naturally. And he was actually contacted by some agency and told that they considered him an economic terrorist because if his information got out, he would basically take down the pesticide industry. So it's the same kind of a thing. Right. Go ahead.
Identical. It's absolutely identical. That the real crime is interfering with the $2 trillion a year industry. And so by helping people heal naturally, I mean, I had patients who didn't even need to go to the hospital for meningitis. They could heal that at home with a, you know, by putting their feet in a bucket full of herbs and putting an ice pack on their head, driving all the toxins down to their body into, you know, charcoal in their stomach, which they would drink before they did that. And boom, meningitis is gone.
Right. And then the word starts to spread. And what I remember, we didn't have a chance to talk a great deal before the show, but when I first found out about you, when I had to go through this horror that is a medical board inquisition, what I had heard about you was that you were working in an urban area of Syracuse and had the audacity to teach people how to heal type 2 diabetes with nutrition. Was that your first crime?
Right.
Okay.
That was the first one I was nailed for. Yeah, I'm sure there are many others.
Right, exactly. How did you find out that you were considered a terrorist? And, you know, she's actually in Panama now, folks, as many doctors are forced to do. I refuse
to leave
the
country.
You have to leave the country. I mean, how ridiculous is that? So how did you find out?
Well, I realize that as an American, you do not have the right to interfere with the operations of government. So if you engage in activity that interferes with the government's ability to do something it had already planned to do, then that pretty much puts you on the economic terrorist list. And people talk about Monsanto or Pharma or whatever controlling government, and I don't think that that's the case at all. I think the government wants bribes, the government wants payoffs, and the government cannot deliver on these promises if the American people are awake, informed, and alert. My final sin, I mean, you mentioned the diabetes, healing that without drugs. But I think the real sin was the economic sin. The government planned on having the citizens of Syracuse repay a $30 million bond, actually repay it with $45 million, and give the $30 million to private citizens who were just going to basically take the money and run. And I said, oh, that's dumb. It's going to raise taxes, and people aren't going to get anything out of it. And so I took the liberty of organizing citizens, getting them to write letters saying that they don't want the government to borrow the money, and if the government borrows the money, they certainly don't want the government to pay it back, and then taking 300 of these letters and mailing them to the bank, the originating bank, which happened to be a Hong Kong bank. I said, look, guys, you're never going to see this money again. It's gone. And if you make this loan, what you're going to have to do in order to get this money back is going to make your third world practices look genteel, because there is no money here in Syracuse. And they actually put some bank executives on an airplane and flew them to Syracuse to check out what I said. And they found it to be true. The mayor said, I'm not paying it back. Common Council said, we're not paying it back. School board said, we're not paying it back. And they said, holy cow, this private citizen tipped us off to a bank robbery, a $30 million bank heist.
Wow.
But they had the blessing of the governor. The governor was backing the whole thing. And so I didn't realize this. And so when the bank...
Wait, which governor? I'm enemies with most of them. Which governor?
It would be Pataki, the one that was in when you were going through your ordeal.
Yeah, one of my favorites. So, okay.
Mm-hmm. I think it was, they all saw a blur and they're all the same, whatever. Anyway, so what happened was the loan was withdrawn, which meant the governor could not deliver on his promise. He had been bribed and he wasn't delivering. Well, you can imagine how that shook the halls of power.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, a bribe doesn't mean anything. A common citizen can interfere. And that's when really the hatchet fell. And I found out I was on the terrorist list when I tried to fly, and I was getting incredibly harsh treatment. And this was back in 2001, 2002, when having a TSA agent grab at your crotch was a big deal, you know.
Right.
And now they've bet to everybody, but I get even more extreme than that, which I don't need to go into that. But what finally happened was I would show up to present my passport, and the poor lady, her eyes would get really bug out as she swiped my passport and saw, I have no idea what was on the screen, and she would call a supervisor to ask if it was okay to issue the ticket. Supervisor would look at the screen, look at me, and said, don't worry, they'll catch her further down at the next step, at the next security check. And so then they'd hand me my ticket. Meanwhile, I know now that I'm going to be caught at the next security check, whatever that means, right? It's pretty ominous. And so I walk down to the part where you hand them your passport and they match it with your driver's license to look at you or whatever, your ticket. And so one guy who was there happened to be a friend of my mother's because she'd worked in the post office. So
Hold on. I don't want people to miss a word of this, Dr. Daniels. We're going to a break. We'll be back after these messages. Stay tuned, folks. Remember, her crime is healing. This is America. We'll be right back. And we're back with What's Healing America, where answers today is medical doctors are now medical assassins, with my special guest, Jennifer Daniels, MD. I strongly suggest you check out her website, vitalitycapsules.com, and definitely listen to some of her archives. If you could continue, Dr. Daniels, with your experience, what you're telling us. Okay, so you went through the first TSA checkpoint, and amazing that they would make that comment right in front of you. In other words,
no, this was right at the place where you go to get your ticket at the check-in, at the airline. Okay, so
that
I go
they
there.
Would make a
now
statement
I'm at the first
like
TSA
that.
Checkpoint. Yeah, at the first TSA checkpoint, and the guy looks at my ticket. He takes out his yellow marker and highlights four S's. Then he passes a message on to someone else, and then immediately blaring over the loud speaker system is female security emergency to checkpoint blah, blah, blah. And I look up, and sure enough, I'm checkpoint number blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, my God, that one's for me. And sure enough, it is. And they pull me out of line with any stuff I might have. And, you know, they ask you questions in a very threatening manner. I mean, the questions are totally ridiculous, just silly questions. The important point, though, I think, is to intimidate you and just use a threatening tone when asking the questions.
Right.
And then, you know, they pat you down. And I'm very sensitive to cold, so I wear a bib overall ski thing, you know, to keep warm on the plane because they control the climate in those planes. Yeah. And... so, of course, we're like, well, why don't you take this off? They said, well, I don't have anything on under this. You know, this would be pure underwear. Because apparently there's some kind of taboo against exposing a nude person in public. And so then they had to kind of fumble. Would you like to go into a private room? I said, oh, no, I'll strip right here in public. Thank you. I'm not going into any private room.
Right.
And so this ordeal is that I would be detained for a good 15 minutes, enough to make my plane late. And it's just every time I would go through this. And the last time was more than a year ago. I flew into New York City for a business meeting. And, it was the last straw. I was like, you know what, guys? I will not have my crotch grabbed. I will strip nude in public. I don't have a problem with that. No, you can't do that. So the supervisor came. The supervisor came. And then they started threatening me and carrying on. I'm like, you know what? I do not need to fly. Obviously, I have the wrong attitude.
Right.
So that's how I learned that I was on this heightened terrorist alert type list. So the way you find out is, of course, you try to fly. But now I understand that they're starting to use these terrorist tactics against citizens who use buses and other forms of transportation.
Yes. Yeah.
So flying won't be enough.
Right, and checkpoints are coming and all the rest of it. You know, while they're trying to bring down this tyranny upon the American people, at the same time people are waking up. And, you know, that's what I'm trying to do, is to, as I said, be an enzyme in that reaction and get people to realize that you're already dead. They're going to get you one way or the other unless you stand up and say, not only are we not going to take this anymore, we're not going to pay for it. I mean, these people...
That's number one. You have to... I think people, when talk about cutting Medicare, like, are you crazy? Cut the TSA. There's a whole list of things you could cut and save even more money. We need to, you know, need to propose a list of things that we could really save a lot of money. And people need to say, hey, wait, let's cut the TSA. Let's cut public health clinic immunizations. Let's cut... And there's a whole list of things that are killing people that we can cut.
Exactly. But there's so much corruption and fraud involved in these various agencies. And, you know, we know that that's one of the big reasons why this is going on. As a matter of fact, as you experienced, you know, obviously the government was getting kickbacks in regards to this fraudulent loan. So one has to wonder, did he actually get the payoff?
I'm sure he did.
And what was the conversation after you started all this trouble for poor Governor Pataki?
Oh, my God. I'm sure they had many meetings, and there was debating whether a lead bullet or a silver bullet, or should it be gold-plated. And thank God I gave scholarships to needy kids. I volunteered for this, volunteered for that. And someone else said, no, it would look really bad. We can't run around murdering something like this. Let's think of something else. I mean, I'm sure they really racked their brain, because for a while there, I was actually being followed and tagged.
Yeah. That's an experience. I went through that. Eventually, I got out of New York, because after three attempts on my life, I just said, you know, they've taken away my visitation with my son. What am I doing here? It's time to leave. Not that I'm afraid. I have no fear of these monsters. But, you know, I have work to do, and I, you know, basically got out of Dodge so I could do the work. But definitely, it's quite obvious that whenever, you know, whatever they were trying to do, you know, with the silver and gold bullets, whatever, and they said, no, that's a little too drastic, Pataki must have made a call to the New York State Medical Board and said,
oh, yeah,
okay,
exactly.
We have a licensed doctor here. Let's take care of the problem.
Exactly. I think that was probably exactly what the conversation was.
Right.
And it was a lot more difficult than they thought. You know, I fought it legally. When I ran out of money, lawyers showed up and volunteered. And they tell me that the government spent, even though I might have spent a few hundred thousand, the government spent several million. So there was
right.
$several million less he could give away to his cronies. So it was a tough bill to swallow.
And taxpayers' dollars at work once again. I mean, you know, this is what
you're
paying for, people. You know, just imagine if doctors like myself and Dr. Daniels were allowed to share with other doctors what we know. Excuse me. You know, we could take down this entire infrastructure that's involved with Big Pharma. Because
no, if people could have a choice, they could have a meaningful choice. I think people who want drugs should have drugs. No problem. I have no problem with that. But people who want to say, you know what, I'm going to pay out of pocket, I'm going to pay for my own medical costs, people find that if you pay out of pocket and you just pay for what you want, your health care costs are generally 89% less.
Right.
And I can talk about that.
And let me just say, I have no problem with what you're saying. If people want drugs, they should have them, if they're given true informed consent. That's always the big if. And even on commercials on television, you know, you're amazed to think that people are actually going to go to their white coats and say, yeah, I want a script for this. You know, as the woman is skipping through the daisies and they're admitting, well, it can cause death and leukemia and blah, blah, blah. And people will still go and ask for a prescription.
They had done research on this, by the way, and they've done it using open-heart surgery, which is a pretty hefty surgery, right? They found that if you gave complete disclosure to everyone undergoing open-heart surgery and told them exactly what you tell doctors in medical school in terms of its effectiveness and potential to benefit them, more than 50% refused the therapy.
Right.
So they know, everyone knows exactly what would happen if people had informed consent.
Right. And I just want to tell you a funny story. What happened to me, I had many experiences, especially as a resident where I did the right thing and you know, basically was told in no uncertain terms that that would not be allowed. But one of my most amazing experiences, I was in a surgery clinic, and of course they would have the residents go in. Now these are very poor people in Flatbush, Brooklyn, okay?
Right.
And they are basically being used as experimental guinea pigs. I realized that very early on. I was told to go in and tell this 38-year-old woman that they, you know, were going to do a gastrectomy on her. And so I asked her if anyone, you know, had told her initially when she went to whatever clinic she had gone to before, because now she's there for her pre-op workup. I asked her, did anybody tell you what a gastrectomy is? And did anybody tell you the problems you would have for the rest of your life after having a gastrectomy? And she said, of course, no. And so her husband was there with her, and I proceeded to tell them both the situation. And I said to her, if I was you, I would get your coat and I would run out of here as fast as you can and never come back. And that's what she did. And needless to say, you know, this wasn't appreciated by the chief resident.
Not at all. That was a $20,000 steak you pulled off their plate.
Well, not only that, you know, the life of a chief resident in surgery, they live to operate. If you think you're going to go to a surgeon for, you know, questions about whether or not you should get an operation, are you serious? That's what they do.
Right.
They operate. Exactly. And they're some of the most dangerous individuals, although orthopedic surgeons oftentimes do a lot of good. You know, I'm not against all doctors, just the ones that harm people. But, yeah, that's an amazing experience, and people are already wanting to call in, but I want to wait till the second hour. I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about some of the things you covered on that very important show the last week of March, where you discussed doctors being assassins and the whole standard of care thing. And see, that's how they control doctors. You can kill as many people as you want as long as you're following the standard of quote-unquote care. Talk about opposite day. Go ahead.
All right. Well, let's talk about, first of all, the doctor is an assassin. How do we know that the doctor is an assassin? We can say that an assassin is someone who murders people for money. That's, I think, pretty straightforward. An assassin murders people for money, number one. Number two, the assassin murders again and again and again. This is just a job. This is what they do. And so if someone is murdering people for money and doing it repeatedly, we can pretty much say that person's an assassin. That's about the size of it.
Okay.
So let's take a look at what doctors do. What doctors do is we know, if you look at Gary Null's book, he wrote Death by Medicine, which is very kind of him to not call it murder. And he says 797,000 people, 296, in 2010 died of murder by medicine. Well, it turns out those numbers have changed. And the latest number year for which we have data is 2012. And I'm going to go back and check two categories that he originally reviewed. And numbers had increased so much in just those two categories that death by medicine, that I'm telling you, murder by medicine, increased to 816,000. 292 people in 2012. Now, there are more or less 800,000 doctors in the United States. You would think that would be one murder per doctor per year. And so those of you who are generous thinkers out there, you might say, well, what's the deal? One murder per doctor per year is okay, I'm willing to allow it for all the lives they save. But wait. The average person sees 18 physicians in their lifetime. That means in their lifetime, by the time they die, at least 18 physicians have participated in their murder, witnessed their murder and said nothing, basically covered up the murder, or abetted in the murder, or party to the murder. Mm-hmm. So it takes 18 doctors to murder one person. Mm-hmm. Now, if you look at that, then each doctor has to aid, abet, or cover up 18 murders on average every year, 16 to 18 murders. That's a pretty hefty habit.
Right. Let me just interject that, of course, there's no way to verify those numbers, in my opinion.
Oh, yes. You can verify them.
Wait a minute. If you add vaccine deaths to that, because they never admit that vaccines cause a death, then the numbers would be exponentially more.
Roger. This is a very low estimate. The 816,000 deaths per year, or murders per year by the medical profession, is a phenomenal low estimate. I'll just digress for a minute and tell you what happened to me. When I was following the standard of care in my practice, I had 4 deaths per year. When I abandoned the standard of care in favor of giving people choices and offering natural stuff, the death rate went to 0. So, clearly, at least 3 out of 4 murders or deaths might be murdered by medicine. So, that to me was such, I just gave people a choice because I felt they were being harmed. I had no idea that that was the extent of it. And so people on blood pressure medicines were dropping dead. And, of course, it was the medicines. It wasn't their hypertension. And people, there's all kinds of people which dropping dead. So all that stopped when I stopped following the standard of care. Okay, so we know then the low estimate is 816,000 deaths per year. Since it takes 18 doctors to kill one patient, and each doctor and the average number of deaths per year is about that, it takes about 16 to 18, each doctor, on average, now some doctors will be lower, some doctors will be higher, on average, each doctor directly murders, aids in the murder of, or conceals, covers up the murder of, 16 people every year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's a pretty good size number. So now we have to ask ourselves, what is it? What is going through the mind of this assassin? So we establish this person's an assassin. But what is going through your mind that allows them to murder again and again and again? What is going through your mind that allows it to continue? And so on that program, I took a look at that. What is the physician saying to himself, you know? And so these are some of the things. First and foremost, an assassin has to have assurance of his own personal safety. So the doctor must believe in his heart of hearts that the patient is helpless and cannot and will not fight back. This is very, very important. One thing that happened in Syracuse, New York, was a orthopedic surgeon did back surgery. Back surgery, of course, was no help. The person still had back surgery, had back pain, rather. He got a gun, went to the doctor's house, and murdered the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
I think he may have murdered himself. I mean, his life was so worthless after that surgery, he just didn't even care. But he just wasn't going to let that doctor get away.
Yeah, it happened in Brooklyn also, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so doctors have to believe that this kind of event just isn't going to happen, that somehow they're safe. And the next thing a doctor has to believe, he's got to believe he will not be investigated. And he has to believe that if investigated, he will not be found guilty. And the standard of care is always used. So if the doctor adheres to the standard of care, then any death that results is not attributable to the doctor, period. That's the definition of it.
Right.
Even though there are books written saying that if you prescribe a drug according to the standard of care, so many people will die. So we know by the profession's own admission that adhering to the standard of care does cause death.
Right. And so, let me just explain to the listeners that basically the way I think of the standard of care is kind of like a flow chart that Big Pharma has created. And, patient comes in with symptom X, and you do these diagnostic tests, and then depending on the outcome, you prescribe this or that or cut this or that out.
Absolutely.
And as long as you stay within that flow chart, it doesn't matter how many people you kill. You will be fine.
Precisely. Now, the other thing about that flow chart is I have an MBA from Wharton. And part of getting the MBA from Wharton is that I got to work for hospitals and sit in on these secret meetings they would have in their boardrooms and in certain administrative offices throughout the hospital where they literally decided on the standard of care. And their only criteria was profit. I didn't hear anyone saying, we're going to save lives if we change the step here.
Wow.
But I did hear people say, we can't remove that step there because that would affect our revenue. So literally, the standard of care...
And I just have to say, whenever I hear something like that, I always think to myself, and what do those people expect when their loved ones are going into their hospital? You know?
They don't even think about it.
They're total psychopaths. They don't even care about their own. And themselves, they could end up on the table one day. They get in a car accident. Right. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, Dr. Daniels, there's that pesky music again. We're going to a break. We'll be back. And when we get back, I want to talk about countries that are now charging doctors with murder by medicine. A very wonderful trend, I must say, in the I think that should be started here. We'll be right back. And we're back with What's Ailing America, where we're talking with Dr. Jennifer Daniels about how medical doctors have become assassins. And I want to talk about this situation in Brazil and also where you are in Panama, but I just realized you were going through a list of reasons why doctors are assassins. I would add to it that their fear of doing the right thing and losing their license and all those years of school loans, etc. And then, of course, seeing what happens to doctors like us. But I wanted to give you an opportunity to finish that list if you want to do that.
Okay. So the doctor needs to believe that if he's investigated, he won't be found guilty. If he's found guilty, he will not suffer any financial or personal penalty. This is really important. And this is where the malpractice laws come into play. So if he fouls a standard of care, then he will never be found guilty of malpractice. Because malpractice is defined as deviating from the standard of care and having patient harm and having the two, one causing the other. So if he sticks to his deadly standard of care, people can drop like flies and they can sue all they want. They will never, ever win because malpractice is designed or defined as deviation from the standard of care. So the present malpractice laws in the United States actually guarantee and multiply the danger and the deadliness of these assassins that we call doctors. The other thing is he will be shunned by his peers if he does not kill.
Right.
And he will be destroyed financially if he does not follow the standard of care and does not murder his patients. Right. And he's also, they tell themselves he's not really killing the patient because the patient would have died sooner without the intervention.
Right.
And the doctor also tells himself, yeah?
Go ahead.
He says, well, and some doctors say, well, I am killing the person with the therapy, but it's a permitted death, as the person would have died sooner without therapy. So one doctor says, I'm not really killing him. Another doctor says, yes, I am killing him, but it's a good death because I'm killing him at a later date than his disease would have.
Right. And just because his hair is falling out and he's vomiting his guts out for all the last days of his life, if they're, you know, oncology, hematology patients and things of that nature, it's okay because that's the standard of care. I'm sure you've experienced what I'm going to mention now. Over the years, I've had probably close to 30 medical doctors that have contacted me for themselves or their children, especially with autism or whatever. And never, not once, have they ever told any of their clients, patients, about anything that I teach them about. And that's what goes to show to me how this control is so complete. This everything that you're talking about.
It's absolutely complete. It's a complete circle. There's no gap in it anywhere because you have the doctor is punished if he does right. He's rewarded if he does wrong. And he's punished if he fails to do wrong. And, you know, so all four directions, there's total control. So if you have control in two separate coordinates, backwards and forward, you have complete control. You can place that person's activity wherever you want to put it. And that's where doctors are, you know. If they provide a standard of care, they're exonerated no matter what.
Right. And that's why people have to investigate these cases against doctors that are charged and see the corruption and fraud. Okay, there's the music. We're going to the break between hours. We'll be right back. And please feel free to start calling in, folks. We'll be back after this short message.
With finance.